Okay, I am back. And yes, it's a little late. And yes, to be honest, I've recorded this. I just spent like maybe an hour trying to record this episode. Well, actually, it wasn't this episode. It was a completely different episode of me just verbally processing what I'm going through. Because, not going to lie, it is really hard. It's really hard to make a comeback. It is. And I'm not trying to make a comeback. What I'm trying to do here is re-establish my relationship to my voice, which was very strong for years. And the last few years, I have just fallen into a pit of self-doubt. And I'm ready to move beyond that. But also, I want to say up front, I don't not want to make myself vulnerable. Like, I think there is definitely I was always against sharing that idea of like you only share from the scar, not the wound. Like, I've always been someone who shares from the wound, like in real time. And I don't think there's, I think that has a purpose for sure. And I will likely continue to do it because I find it very difficult not to. But what I do want to do is be a little more discerning. You know, I can verbally process what I'm moving through and not put it out there for everyone if I don't want to. And I may still share that episode. In fact, I probably will. But right now, I feel like I needed to do that just to feel okay about taking up space again. You know, there was a lot of shit that I had to process myself to get to the point of hitting record on this episode. And I want to be upfront about that. It absolutely was a thing. And now I have kind of moved through the resistance and the self-doubt that I was experiencing a little. I've taken the edge off it by doing that. And I think that's a lesson really for all of us, you know, like we can, I mean, maybe not for all of us. I think most people keep their cards too close to their chest, and they don't share and they don't make themselves vulnerable. And I do. And sometimes I think I do it to my detriment. And yeah, and I do think that there are things that I can just choose to keep for myself. But the cliff notes of that unheard episode is that, yeah, I was just going in circles, really trying to give myself permission to record this. And now that I've done that, here I am recording it. I've had a week. I've had a crazy week where I, you know, released the episode last week. It was like ripping the Band-Aid off. I felt really good about it. I felt inspired. I was ready to continue on and keep recording, and then life. And this is so common. This is such a common thing that I see and have seen over my decades of working with women around their voices, is like this is usually what happens, is you take this big leap of faith and then life throws a whole bunch of, you know, like hurdles. Do you really want this? And a lot of the time we can convince ourselves that, nah, actually, I think I'm pretty good. And so we go into hiding. And that was me this week. I ripped off the Band-Aid last week, and then I procrastinated on recording. And then Tuesday, my kid was homesick and I was slammed with work. And then Wednesday morning, she came in early in the morning, had a nightmare. Yesterday was my day off. It was my first day off for fucking ages. And I had planned on just, you know, like being in my own creative space. But of course, kiddo was sick. And not only that, but she had a nightmare. And so she didn't want me to leave the house at all, even to come the 3 meters to my studio outside. And so I basically had to take the day off, which probably wasn't a bad thing because I have not stopped since September. I've just been working, every waking moment. Not every waking moment, that's an exaggeration, but like a lot more work than is probably healthily sustainable for me. And things are starting to open up a little bit now. I'm doing 3 days in talent management and really loving it. So I've been doing that now for since September. Lem, my old executive producer at Listener, went off to start her own talent agency, and she left in about this time last year from the network, and then she was going away for 6 weeks, and she just needed someone to manage things while she was gone, look after her business, which was, you know, like a baby business that is really growing very rapidly, and she didn't know who she could trust it with besides me. And so I was honored and I took it on, and it was really interesting and challenging. And then I've stayed on. So the day that I found out I was being made redundant, actually, funnily enough, I was it wasn't a surprise to me. It's always a shock, even when it's not a surprise. This is like not at all related, but you know, it's a bad analogy. But you know, when you have someone in your life who is just really long-term sick and holding on by a thread, and for a very long time, and you want, you know, part of you wants them to pass on so that they are relieved, and guiltily probably also you are relieved. And that kind of was what it felt like. I felt like it was a long time coming. But even when that person passes, it's still a shock, right? Like, it's still like, oh, fuck. And yeah, and so it kind of felt not like that, but like that, in that I could see the end of the road. I knew that it was coming. I didn't know when. I'd been on a bunch of 6-month contract extensions. And so I knew, but it was still like real. It was real. Suddenly real. And before that, it was just an idea. And there's a difference, you know? And so, sorry, I've got a, my kid had a sore throat, and I'm kind of feeling like I've got a little bit of a sore throat. So excuse the throat clearing, excessive throat clearing. So yeah. So basically, what was I saying? Yeah, so it was real. And there was a little bit of grief about that, because I had spent 3 years working on this show and with Chloe and Elle and loving it. And yes, it was challenging at times, but there were moments where I feel like I allowed my role as producer of that show to dictate my worthiness. In some ways, like, it was like my identity became wrapped up in it a bit, and I'd kind of undone that a little bit in the lead up. So, but it still was like, oh, there's some grief there, because it's like, it's the end of something, and I find endings really difficult. I do. And liberating and still challenging to navigate. But basically, my boss Sam rang me and was like, yeah, the contract hasn't renewed. Unfortunately, we're going to have to let you go. And they were lovely about it. They gave me plenty of notice, you know, almost a couple of months, I think. And I was really grateful for that. So the interesting thing, though, so it was October. So yeah, it was kind of like 3 months notice, which was pretty good. And it's funny, because I did feel a little bit of fear. Like, I felt a bit of fear of like, oh my God, what's next? But I knew that something would unfold. So hang up from Sam, and Lem calls me. I'd been filling in with her agency for 6 weeks while she was away. And basically she came back and she said, I really don't want to do this without you. Will you come on for just like 10 hours a week? And so I started doing that, and I've really enjoyed it. And as time has progressed and the business is growing, and and so I'm now doing kind of 3 days with Lem. And so that's giving me some space to do some of my own things. So as luck would have had it, when I said yes to Lem, so from that September school holidays through to the end of the year when I finished right before Christmas at the network, I was basically managing the, like, working, switching between, like, talent management to Darling Shine. And that was full time, pretty much full time then, between the two. And then mid-December, I got a call from someone who was also ex-SCA, where I used to work, and they wanted me to come on board to take on this impossible project, doing, like, it was actually two podcasts. They had these dates set, so this was, like, mid-December, I would say maybe around the 10th of December. They had the dates had to be, were firm on recording because three of the people who were key to it were only available in those dates. They were from around the world, and this was the only time they could all be together in person. And so that was firm, but nothing else had really been organized. They knew there was two formats of the show. They had a loose idea of what those looked like, and nothing else. So no host, no studios, nothing. And so over, like, in the lead up to Christmas, and one thing you need to know about the television industry is that, like, it shuts down over, you know, over summer, really. A lot of the, like, it's just not really a big filming time. So most people take their leave who work in TV studios and, you know, and piss off. So it can be, and also, like, most businesses shut at that around, I think it was the 18th of March around then. So I had a very limited window to kind of get everything together. And I say TV studio because they wanted to film in a TV studio over just a regular studio. So it was like, it was a feat. And I hadn't worked in television before. I worked in a TV studio just, like, at uni. We had a TV studio and, you know, we'd just play and learn how to do it. But like, that was 1990, like, six, I was at uni. So 1996 to 1998 or whatever it was. So it's been a long time, and things have changed a lot since then. So basically, I take it on in mid-December, and it was huge. It was a huge project. I had to source a host from, high-profile host from the US, and six high-profile guests, also from overseas, and make those time zones work with the Australian time zones, where, because we'd be filming here. So it had to be a host who was willing to fly out for 3 days of filming. Like, it was just a massive, massive, massive project, and I took it on, and pretty much it's all I've done since I took it on in December. And there were periods where I had to put Lem's work on hold because I just couldn't do both. It was so all-consuming. But right now, things are opening up a little, and I'm having a little bit more space. We've kind of gotten through the bulk of the production, and now we're just about to start the publishing phase. So I have a little bit more space, and that feels really good. And I've been thinking about, like, what do I want to do with that space? And I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure what the direction I'm going in is. I feel like I'm in this bit of a transitional phase. I have been a producer for the last 3 years. Pretty much that's all I've done besides the talent at management stuff. Oh God, my neighbour's talking on the back. Hang on one sec. I'm just going to close this window. Even though it is fucking ridiculously hot here today. So I'm basically recording in a sauna. Let it be known, I am recording in a sauna. So where was I? So I'm doing the talent management work. And things have started to open up again. And I'm thinking about what might be next. And so I've been doing the production work for a number of years. And there are things that I really love about it, and there are things that I don't love about it. Production is a lot of grunt work. It's a lot of details, organizing, being on set. I mean, being on set for those 4 days in Sydney was like the most life-affirming thing. It was such a fun, fun experience. But it was 4 days of fun and a lot of work, a lot of work. And a lot of work that my brain isn't really built to do in that long, focused, being across all the details all the time. So I had to rely on a lot of my scaffolding. And and then just in the production phase, like now that we're kind of in this phase where it's opening up, I am looking forward to getting this project out into the world and moving on to whatever's next. And it has made me think, do I want to produce? The things that I love about producing are more about the creative side. You know, I love working with talent. I love, you know, the branding side of things. I love the messaging side of things, the storytelling side of things. But I don't enjoy all of the detail. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I enjoy the detail when it's in that planning phase. Like, I feel like my ideal thing would be just to work in the startup space and kind of just go from startup to startup to startup, you know, and then move on. Because I don't enjoy the implementation or execution stage as much as I do the prep and planning. Like, prep and planning, oh, like I froth on that shit. But the implementation and the execution, not so much. It feels like a task. I think that's quite common for, well, probably a lot of people, but definitely ADHD people. So I've just been thinking, like, what now that I've got this kind of thing where, sorry, I'm just getting better situated. Now that I'm in this period where I'm not, like, desperate for work in the ways that I have been before. You know, I have the talent management work. I love it. It is basically replacing what I was earning through the network. So my basic needs are met through that. And the project that I've been working on has brought in some good kind of income. And so I am, for probably the first time in my life, feeling like I'm in a privileged position where I'm not on the back foot and not having to do something out of sheer desperation, you know, like not having to, steal from Peter to pay Paul and all of that stuff. That there were periods. I remember when it was like 2017, and I would have recorded heaps of episodes around this, but like there was this point where I reached real desperation. I remember being hooked up to an ECG thinking I was going to, like, I was having a heart attack, like, but it was anxiety because, yeah, everything I was doing, I was at the time, I think I was still trying to get Radcasters to work. I had done like maybe 3 or 4 launches and no one had bought, and I had overheads, team overheads. And it was just like, I just felt sick all the time, this anxious, sick mess. And then Lisa and I decided to try our business mastermind. And we did it and it worked. And then we did it again. And for the first time I had this like, oh, I can breathe. Financially, there's income coming in. I'm not desperate for work. And that was one of the most creative times in my life. I felt good, you know, not initially, but like once I had the income side of things sorted, I felt creative again. And then similar thing kind of happened during COVID, because we had a lot of government payments, which meant that I wasn't forced to, so that whole period of 2017, 2018, 2019, I ran a few programs. I remember I also ran a podcaster's mastermind. That must have been 2019. And I had like 25 people sign up. And it was, again, one of those periods of like prosperity where I was doing work. I loved it. I was busy and it was good for my mental health. And I was also, you know, just not worried about money. And it was such a nice time. And and from the work perspective, I'm kind of in a place where, yeah, the income is coming in. It's there. And my whole idea when I found out that I was being made redundant, the idea was, yeah, you know, I've got Lem's work there, so I don't have to stress. So what I'll do is I'll wrap there on the 18th of December and I'll just cruise through the school holidays. And then I will think about what's next when I'm back, because I'm going to get a redundancy payout, and that'll be enough to kind of float me for the next 2 to 3 months, and then I can get serious about what I'm going to do. But instead, this other big project came up, and it became all consuming, and most of my school holidays I was not at all present with my daughter. And you know, and there's been a lot of lessons in this project, a lot of lessons. Maybe I'll unpack some for you here, but you know, just in like stepping into a place of greater authority. And also it's highlighted how fucked up the corporate environment is, in terms of like, I never worked for someone else because I just didn't feel like I could. And I think what the last 3 years has highlighted to me is like, yeah, I don't think I can. I think I can in the right, if it's the right bubble, right? Like working at Listener, I was kind of in a bubble. I was in a great bubble. My boss, Sam Kavanagh at Listener, is just one of the best fucking people going around. He really did. I said to him once, you healed the ghosts of employers past, right? Because he really created a space where we had full autonomy over our roles. And he knew that if he left us to do our thing, we were capable humans. We would step up. We would come to the party. And we did. You know, he had some incredible producers working under him. But it never felt like we were working under him. He's one of the few bosses that I haven't had that feeling of hierarchy with. You know, like I knew that I could just say what I needed to say. I didn't have to mask. I could just be me. And he was accepting of that. And I felt really safe there. But then like every now and then I would just get like a little glimpse into what was outside the bubble. And I felt like, oh yeah, that's right. It's not all workplaces. In fact, I would say fuck all workplaces are that safe. Now, with particularly for neurodivergent folk, you know, they're not very accommodating. This whole like, I think I used to talk about it being workplaces feeling like adult daycare. And to a certain extent, unless you're in a little bubble, they do feel like that, because there is this expectation. You must be in the office 4 days. Like what? From not clock in at 9, finish at 5. Those are your hours. You know, and I've been so far removed from that. And then I had a reminder on this project that that's not generally how it works. You know, I was working with someone who I'd said, my brother and my sister-in-law are here with their family. I'm going to spend some time with them. And they had replied, oh, sorry, I didn't realize it was a day of annual leave for you. I mean, that was quite passive aggressive, but you know, but that's the expectation. You are on. And in some businesses, you need to be on all the time, you know, like, they are pinging at fucking 8 p.m. and 9 p.m. And that's just, and some people thrive in those environments. Some people thrive in those environments where their life is their work. I don't, it's not, I've never desired that. I have desired to be all consumed by my work, but I haven't ever desired to just slog my guts out for a paycheck, you know, but yeah. That's how most workplaces are, you know, maybe not in the expectation that you slog your guts out 24 hours a day and you're, you know, available all the time. But there are rules, you know, and maybe I don't really thrive so much in those rules. So all of this has had me thinking, what is next for me? What do I want? What don't I want? You know, I used to always say, what am I available for? Well, what am I available for? I kind of know what I'm not available for. And the interesting thing is, I think the other thing that I've learned throughout these last few years of being employed is like, I can make it work and I can do a really great job. But it does come at a cost. And while, like, I'm never going to be someone who says I'll never do that again, because I think that's one way just to, like, limit yourself. I might do it again. I don't know what the future holds. Yes, I'm in a great place now, but life has shown me, you know, like, work is up and down. And sometimes, yeah, you're thriving and everything's going amazing. And sometimes are really, really fucking hard. And I have been in some really, really fucking hard times. Before, you know, when I took on the job at the network in 2023, at the beginning of 2023, I was probably the most desperate I had ever been. I had borrowed money off my parents to fix my car. And I borrowed money off parents just to fucking live because no money was coming in. And I know I've spoken about this before on the podcast, but it was me going home for Christmas and my dad saying, just get any job, like any work you can do where you don't have to use your brain, like take it, get some money coming in, use that time to recover. And, you know, and so I didn't quite do that because I ended up getting the job at Listener and it wasn't an easy job. But it certainly gave me a lot, you know. It gave me routine and structure, which I really needed. It gave me consistent, or, you know, relatively consistent income. It gave me so much. It gave me confidence in my ability to do things that I never thought I could do. I never thought I could work in a workplace, and this showed me that I can. And also that I'm really fucking good at my job. And, you know, like, really fucking good at my job. And I can completely own that. So, yeah, so there's been a lot of gifts. And now that I'm in this fortunate position where I have work and I enjoy the work that I'm doing, and this big project is kind of coming to the lighter phase for the next few months. And yeah, and I'm like, what do I want? What am I available for? And I think what I've really loved about all of the things that I've done in my life, which is so many, the things that I loved the most was probably, like, if I imagine my, like, a time where I felt the most amazing, there's a few moments work-wise, and they've all been at the retreats I used to host. I didn't do many, but we did them as part of the mastermind that Lisa and I did. We ran two retreats each mastermind, and they were just so incredible, just bringing, like, women together. I remember at our first retreat, we stayed at this amazing house above Burley Heads, and Lisa and I were there, and the women were all in the lounge room working on some task that we'd given them. And Lisa and I just stood in the kitchen, looked at each other and started crying. And we were just like, this is amazing. This is so amazing that we've created this together, you know. And those retreats were, I get emotional just thinking about it. They were some of the best times. I also remember at one of them I had a complete meltdown. Now I know why, like, in terms of being autistic, I was just completely overwhelmed. And when I'm overwhelmed, I find it very difficult to verbalize what I need. And anyway, so I had a bit of a meltdown at one of them, which was slightly embarrassing, but also I'm a human. And anyway, and then I went on to run a few of my own retreats. And yeah, and I remember one of them was up in the hinterland, and it was more like a chill creative retreat, you know. And it was a beautiful spot, and I was in the pool. It had like one of those infinity edges, and it just overlooked towards the coastline, and I felt so alive. And I really want that feeling. I really want that feeling of, like, spaciousness and connectedness and creativity and joy. You know, those retreats were really a joy to run. I attracted the most incredible humans to them. And yeah, and I just loved every minute of it. So But I also really love the one-to-one work that I used to do. And I felt conflicted about coming back to that, I think, because I don't know, maybe I'd had this idea around coaching being a bit of a, I don't know, farce? Anyway, I think there's a lot of people that aren't really in integrity. And I don't necessarily want to be a coach. I don't think I was ever a coach. I was probably more, about guidance and mentoring. And I have done, like, because I haven't had a lot of time, I haven't done a lot of that stuff the last little while. And but when I do, when someone reaches out and says, can we do a session together, I'm always going to say yes, because I love that. I love getting together. My favorite things are sitting with someone and being in their creative energy and in their ideas and helping them refine it and helping them to really see and hone in on what their messaging is. And I think over the years I've developed maybe a little bit of a framework around how I do that, which I would like to develop a little bit further. But those are the things that I would like to get back into, in addition to this, in addition to podcasting and maybe a bit of public speaking, maybe not quite. I don't think I'm quite ready for the public speaking yet. But I still am not 100% sure on the direction, because I don't necessarily want to just pigeonhole myself into podcasting. I feel like where my strength more is, and I used to say this a lot, but I don't think people really understood what I was referring to when I would call myself like a creative director. Like, people didn't really get that. But that's really what I feel like my strength is. I'm really great at seeing direction creatively. So seeing where someone's messaging might not be hitting the mark, where it's not necessarily like, hitting the mark. And I love that shit, you know. So anyway, so where I'm at right now is not feeling pressured to, like, there's a little internal pressure sometimes to have more clarity, but like, also I know that clarity comes from doing, not from thinking about. That some clarity comes from thinking about, but most clarity comes when you put things into action, when you put things into motion. And then you realize, oh, that's not quite feeling right. You know, because like the last few years, I've really thought about starting my own talent management agency. This was before the position with LEM came up. So much so, I even had like the name, I've got the domain. Of course I have. And it's all there. The logo's there, everything. But then I kind of just was like, oh, you know, I don't really have the connections and it sounds like a lot of work and blah, 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 blah. And then the opportunity kind of arose to do it. And I actually don't have any desire now that I've done it with LEM and continue to do it with LEM. I'm kind of like, I have no desire to run my own business. I'd much rather use my time and energy to help elevate LEM's business and to build something with her, for her. While I work on what I really want to do, because my desire, I guess, is to work more creatively with people. It's less about the deals, which is a lot of what talent management is, and managing the talent, making sure they do what they're contracted to do, and all that kind of jazz. It's less creative, and I still need, if there's one thing I've learned, I still need that creative outlet of self-expression in some form, which I think is why I'm back at the mic. And kind of this has always been a form of expression for me, and I'm sure it will continue to be a form of expression to me. And then what the fuck is that? That's the mower. Great. So I'll just kind of wrap it up here. So the guys are about to mow the park. Oh my God, that is so loud. Actually, he's going to mow right behind me. So I'm just going to wrap up here and say, that's why I'm back. I'm back here to figure it out. I'm back here to find what my direction is going to be. And I know that the only way I'm going to do that is by actually starting. So one thing that I just want to say before I go is I'm going to be in Bali in May. And I had put out there that I'm open to doing a 1 to 2 day one-on-one kind of creative intensive slash retreat while I'm there. I think the dates are, we're there from the week of the 16th to the 23rd. So if you're keen to work one-on-one with me in Bali, yell out. No pressure, because I'm not really bothered either way. I probably do need to actually have some time just with my family and not be working all the time. But I would really like to dip my toe back in. So if that's something that speaks to you, reach out to me. You know where to find me, hopefully. My website's Carly Nimmo. My Instagram's Carlosophies. And yeah, and you can connect with me there and we can have a chat about what's possible. But yeah, I feel like when I put that out there, I had a surprisingly good response, and people were like, tell me when you do this again. This timing isn't right, but like, I really want to do a retreat with you. And a lot of them seem to want to do group. So it has got me thinking maybe later this year, in the second half of the year, or early 2027, or both. Maybe I'll run something that's local around this area, the Byron area, and maybe I'll run something in Bali, and we'll just see what happens. But yeah, I feel excited and hopeful about the future, and really privileged to be able to be in this space, because I know, look, hey, times are tough, and they're tough for me. That, like, financially, fucking hell, I just saw petrol at my local station is $2.60 a litre. What the fuck? You know, there's so much crazy shit going on right now, and inflation and home loans rising, and, you know, it's just like, what crazy times that we're living in. I'm certainly not swimming around in cash, but I do feel like I have more space than I have for a long time. And I want to work out how to set myself up for the future from here. From a place of, thank goodness, having my immediate needs met. And I think that's what I'm saying here. It's like, for me, taking that job at the network was such a relief because I had my immediate needs met. The stuff, the roof, you know, certainly wouldn't pay the whole mortgage, but like, we could survive. And sure, we couldn't afford a holiday. We couldn't, you know, we don't eat out. We live a very frugal kind of life. But we manage, we get by. Our basic needs are met. And when our basic needs are met, that's when we have the privilege of being able to be creative. You know, it's very sad to me that this life that most of us live don't afford us that privilege. That was the biggest lesson for me out of the last 5-6 years, was, you know, creativity is a privilege. And so now that I have that privilege, I don't want to squander it. I don't want to waste it. I want to use it. And I want to use it not just for myself, but I want to use it to, you know, to benefit others. So that's kind of where I'm at. And I didn't expect to be talking for nearly 40 minutes. But obviously that first dud, no, it wasn't a dud, but that first episode where I just was verbally processing allowed me to get to this point now where I do feel a bit more confident talking and taking up space. And I hope this has had some value for you. But it's really, the most important thing is that it's really had some value for me. So if you got this far, thanks for listening. And love ya. Bye.